Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded. Actually, I should say, Author Magazine, we've got a new interview up there with Ryan Britt, author of Luke Skywalker Can't Read and Other Geeky Truths, a fascinating interview with a fascinating guy. Check it out. It's up there now at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, you can go to pnwa.org. So something a little different today, on Author to Author. The two authors today are going to be me and you, the listener. I'm going to talk about stories, storytelling, specifically a new story about writing. A new story, a better story. Better story about writing. If you want to join this conversation and you're listening live, you can do so by calling in at 661-449-9357. Again, that is 661-449-9357. And if you are interested in some of the on what I'm talking about today, if you think it might be helpful for your writing group or your writing organization, go to williamknauer.com, K-E-N-O-W-E-R, just like my name, and go over to Craft and Confidence, my teaching, coaching, and keynote link, and that'll give you all the information you need about contacting me to work with you as an individual or with your organization or your writing group. So stories. Stories are so important. I mean, if you're a writer, you're a storyteller. You spend your days, perhaps, crafting these stories. But I've come to understand, really, that stories are not just important to writers and journalists and actors and storytellers, professional storytellers. Stories are really how we human beings think. It's how we deal with the world. It's how we think about the world. It's the only way we actually know how to relate to the world is through story, which I will define for you here in a moment. In fact, so the only question a person has is not whether they're going to tell stories or not. The question is whether we, as storytellers, whether we're doing it on the page or just in our own mind, whether we're going to do it on purpose. That's really the only question we face. Are we going to tell stories on purpose? Are we going to tell a story about ourselves and the world that serves us? Or are we going to tell stories accidentally? I've done it both ways. I still do it both ways every day to some degree, and my life becomes the story I tell about it. But here's what I mean by a story. I don't just mean those stories with beginning, middle, and end. Those sort of artificial narratives. I say artificial because, you know, I write like kind of memoir now, and the memoir is funny because we give it a beginning, middle, and end, but really a life isn't led that way. It doesn't have a beginning, middle, and end. It just goes and goes and goes. It blends right out of our mother and father and into our own life, and then our lives blend into others even after we're dead. It just goes on and on and on. So we create these stories with beginning, middle, and end. But there's another way of looking at story, and it's this. I want you to picture art class, a life drawing class, and in the middle of this class is the model. There she is, posed for the artists who surround her on all 360 degrees on all sides. And each artist has got their canvas, and each artist is absolutely equally skilled at rendering exactly what they see, exactly how the artist is posed. And so in this classroom, every single portrait drawn, because every artist is equally skilled at rendering what they see, every single portrait drawn would be absolutely accurate and absolutely and unavoidably incomplete, because each artist can only render what they see, and they can't see everything. They can only see the model from one point of view. That, to me, is another definition of storytelling. Human beings can only see things from one point of view at a time. It's as if we have sort of a camera that looks at life from one point of view at a time. Except, unlike in the art class, in the life drawing class, where each artist is stationed statically around the model, we have imaginations. We have a flexible mind that can turn life, turn events, turn our lives and our past and our future even in our minds until we see it from a point of view that serves us. We can look at, and every time we turn life in this way, in the life drawing class, that model is life. She is alive. She is life if she's the model. Whenever we turn life in that way, we see it from a different point of view. We tell a different story about it, and our life changes. Now, I learned this specifically before I began applying it to writing, to the different story about writing. I learned this specifically with my son, who some of you may have heard me talk about on this show a few times. He was diagnosed on the autism spectrum because of his behavior. And the behavior, in this case, was he would talk mostly to himself. He would spend most of his time in his imagination, humming and thumping on his chest and running back and forth and talking mostly to himself. Those were his behaviors, and those behaviors were facts. That is, there was no arguing about the fact. There was no debate. There was nothing to discuss about the fact that he ran back and forth and drummed on his chest and hummed and thumped and talked mostly to himself. That was a fact. The only question is, what did those facts mean? And what were we going to do about them, if anything? How were we going to relate to this boy based on what was happening in front of us? Now, for a long time, I believed that there were, I guess you would say, broken people in the world. Some of them were evil. Some of them were stupid. Some of them just weren't talented. Some had failed. Some just didn't have what it took. And some maybe had autism. I didn't like that definition, but it seemed to me that it was possible that there are some people who were right and some who were wrong and some who were good, some who were bad. There seemed to be universal agreement on this. Religion agreed on it. Science agreed on it. Everyone agreed on it. There were broken people and unbroken people in the world. But when I looked down at my son and his behavior, it would have been easy to conclude he was broken because I didn't understand how, given that behavior, which I had not seen in other people before, how this could lead to any kind of happiness or success in his world. And if he was broken, the only thing I could do was try to fix it. But I didn't know how to fix him. And I didn't like seeing him as broken. I didn't like seeing myself as broken, but I sometimes did because I hadn't had the kind of success I wanted to. And I didn't like seeing him as broken because he was my son and I loved him and I wanted him to flourish. And so eventually I asked myself this question. Well, I don't like being around broken people. I don't know how to relate to broken people. I don't want to be broken. I don't want him to be broken. I don't want anyone to be broken. What if no one is broken? What if no one in the world is broken? Not one person. That was the question I asked because it was the only way I knew how to look at him and not see a broken person. To turn, so to speak, the facts of his behavior as if he were the model in that life drawing class. And I could either look at him as someone who's broken and needing to be fixed or simply someone dealing with the constant challenge of being human, of being authentic to oneself, and also trying to get along with other people, a challenge I have to deal with all the time. And many of these kids called autistic are simply people who have retreated into themselves because that's where they know how to be authentic themselves without having to please other people. And so I said, what if no one is broken? And every time I saw him behaving in a way that I didn't understand, I had to make a choice. I could see him as a broken person or see him as an unbroken person. I couldn't change the facts. I couldn't change the fact of his behavior, but I could change my story about it. And when I looked at him one way, as someone who was broken, all I could think was, how do I fix it? And I didn't know how to do that. But when I looked at him as someone unbroken, I got different answers. I got different answers about how to work with him. That's when my wife and I started joining him. That's when we, instead of trying to stop him from doing his behavior, we did it with him. And that led to the changes that we have seen in him. We didn't change. All we changed was our story about the behavior. We changed the story. And that changed the answers we got to the question, what do we do now? So, in writing, there are some facts also that I think anyone who has ever written to share with other people has experienced. And these facts are, some days the writing goes well, some days it does not. And some days you get rejection letters, and some days you get acceptance letters. And sometimes you're number one on the New York Times bestseller list, and sometimes you aren't on that list at all. It's a great variation in experience, but these are facts that pretty much every writer has to contend with. Some people like your work and some people don't. These are facts. That's the way it goes. You're going to have those experiences. You're going to have people love your work and you're going to have people hate your work. You may or may not hear from them all, but it's going to happen. And you're going to love your work and you're probably going to hate your work sometimes. These are facts. What do we do with them? Well, there's one story going around that I hear a lot, and it goes like this, basically. Some have it and some don't. Some have it and some don't. Some have talent and some don't. And I'll tell you, I hear this story a lot. I hear it a lot from my students. I just want to know if I'm talented or not, or a client will come to me. Just read my work and tell me if I'm talented or not. I want to know if I have what it takes. And it's an understandable story to tell about human beings. Some seem to flourish right away with whatever they're doing, and some struggle for a long time. Some sell lots of books, some sell only a few. And sometimes you read people's work by other writers, and we think, oh, that's just brilliant. That's just lovely. That so resonates with me. That so says just what life is like. That's such an interesting and original story. And sometimes we read work and we think, that's not interesting at all. That's not original at all. Why did they write that? That's not interesting. That's not alive. I wouldn't have written that. Why did they write that? Oh, they just don't have what it takes. They just don't have what it takes. Some have it, some don't. Some have it, some don't. The story I hear a lot, well, they just didn't have it. Well, I'd like to offer you another story, which goes like this. Everybody has everything they need to tell any story they want. Everyone. Everyone. If they have a story they want to tell, they have a book they want to write, they have a poem they want to write, they have everything they need to write that poem, story, book, or essay. They don't need a book on writing, though you can get them if you want. They don't need a magazine for writers, although you can go get one if you want. You don't need a class or go take one if you want. You were born everything you need. You have what it takes. You already do. So what do you have? Well, first of all, you have a curiosity. You have curiosity. Everyone is born curious about life. But in my experience, no two people are exactly curious about exactly everything. No one's curiosity is identical. I can think of nothing more unique to me than what I'm curious about. I can't be argued out of it. It's absurd to think about, isn't it? To argue you out of your curiosity about what you're interested in. It's so unique to you and so personal to you and so sovereign to you. In fact, it feels so much like you. Mine feels so much like me. It's almost hard to recognize it as special in a way. It just feels so much like me. I wouldn't even know how to be me without that curiosity. It so guides me through my life. You know, I met David Laskin. I interviewed, he's on the Author Magazine. You can watch the interview with him, but he's a nonfiction author. And I was thinking about this curiosity thing. And I said to him, I met him at a writer's conference. And I said, David, don't you think the biggest difference between sort of the beginning writer, the writer who's kind of still racked by a particular kind of insecurity, and the more established writer is really just the degree to which the writer has invested in their own curiosity, the degree to which the writer has said, I trust that because I'm interested in something, it's worthy of my attention. Because I'm curious, it's worthy of my attention. And David said, oh, absolutely. That's absolutely true. And I said, well, so for instance, David, what was your first book? Because he had written for newspapers and magazines, and then he wrote his first book. And he said, oh, that was a good one. He said, that was the history of America. The history of weather in America. And I said, okay, really? Okay, why is that so interesting? Because that doesn't sound that interesting to me. And he said, are you kidding me? The weather, to be able to look out over the mountains and see the clouds and the rain and know that and feel the wind and know it how in so much time that this is what's going to be going on. And then the effect that the weather has on the land in terms of rain and wind and snow and how the land affects culture. And it just ripples out. It affects everything. And he explained it all to me. And I listened and I nodded and I still wasn't that interested. But it wasn't my book. It was David's. And so he wrote the book because he was interested for all those other people who might be interested too. He didn't check with me first to decide or if he should write it, if I'm interested. If he had, and if I maybe had been a little less wise, I would have said, well, no, you shouldn't write that book because I'm not interested. But he did write it because he's interested. I am never so bright and patient and hungry as when I am hot on the trail of what I am interested in. Because when I'm interested in something, when I'm curious about it, I'm not doing it for some result. I don't want, it's not about money. It's not about success or attention or approval. It's just about keeping my attention on that thing because my attention has to be somewhere. It's always got to be somewhere. And it's so much better when it's on something I'm curious about than when it's on something that I am not curious about. It feels better to lay my attention on what I want to know than what I don't want to know. You will never be more intelligent than when you focus your attention on your curiosity. Your intelligence is your curiosity. And your genius is your curiosity indulged. That's what a genius looks like. Someone who has indulged their curiosity, sometimes to the chagrin of other people. And your curiosity is so intertwined with love. And by the way, you don't get to decide what you're curious about. You don't get to decide. Your curiosity chooses for itself. When I spotted my wife when I was 17, I wasn't married to her then, I didn't know, but I saw her. To say that I fell in love with her would be inaccurate. I recognized something. I recognized it. I recognized her. That's what love felt like, recognition. And when you see something and it draws your attention, it's recognition. Love, curiosity, it's all the same thing. When I think about my relationship to my wife, it is overall, I am interested in her. I am curious about her. Still, 25 years later, I'm still curious. And I am, even though I feel like I know what she's going to say every day, I don't. I don't really. She still surprises me. I'm just curious in her attention. So you have that. You have your curiosity. You also have an imagination. And I want you to think about your imagination, this loyal, loyal servant, like Google. Think of it like Google. So there you are, and your imagination is like Google, and Google will bring you will answer any question it can answer. It doesn't care who you are. It doesn't care what the question is. It doesn't judge the question. It answers them. Your imagination's job is to answer the question, to answer the questions you ask. How am I going to write this book? What should come next? Who should I marry? Where should I live? Your imagination answers the questions. And The internet, to me, is like intelligence, which is to say, writing really taught me the relationship between curiosity, the imagination, and intelligence. My experience of writing is this. I sit at my desk, and I ask questions. What should I write about today? And then my imagination brings to me the answer. To say I made up the answer would be inaccurate and impractical. It comes to me. It comes to me. I sort of receive it. I wait. I listen. It comes. And I've come to see intelligence. I used to see intelligence like a computer. I kind of did, in the model of some have it and some don't. You know, some computers have have 8 gigabytes of RAM. Some have 12 gigabytes of RAM. Some have this processor. Some have that processor. Some computers are better than other computers. But the internet is the same for everybody. I used to view intelligence more like computers. Some people's brains, or so I'd been told, were just better than other people's brains, or I thought I'd been told that. Maybe I made it up myself. I don't know. But I didn't like that story because I wanted my brain to be the best possible brain it could. But the experience of writing has really taught me that that model of intelligence is just, it's not accurate and it's not practical and it doesn't reflect my experience of my own relationship to intelligence. I ask questions and then answers come to me. And I've come to the conclusion that just like the internet is equally available to everyone, so is intelligence. So is intelligence. We're all drinking from the same pool, but our questions are all different. And so our answers are all different. And so our stories are all different. And so our lives are all different. There's a vast difference in experience. There's an infinite difference in experience. But there's an absolute equality in the source of the answers to the questions we ask. I can draw no other conclusion, and I'll tell you, part of the reason I've come to that conclusion in my own life is that when I try to write from a place of wondering whether I'm better than or worse than, because in the world of some have it and some don't, I want to know that I have it because I want to write and I want to share my work with other people, so I have to have it. And it would seem that some have more of it than others. And I want to have the most of it that I possibly can, because the more of it you have, the happier you are. And all I want to do is be happy. And if I got to have a lot of it to be happy, then by God, I need to have a lot of it. How much do I have? I got to find out. Well, I don't know how to answer that question. And when I try to write from a place of proving myself, when I try to write from a place of knowing where I stand in the hierarchy of writers and people, it all goes haywire. I don't enjoy the experience. I don't know how to measure myself. And suddenly the world is just a giant competition. And nothing, it's not a friendly world. Everyone is in competition with me. And I don't even want to live in that world, really. But when I understand that everybody is absolutely, absolutely, deeply equal, their experiences aren't the same, but the source of their intelligence is absolutely as equal as our internet, when I view the world that way, now I don't have to prove anything. Now I don't have to know where I stand. Now I just have to ask the question, what do I want to write about? That's all I have to do. I just have to be curious, and that's enough. That's enough. So that's my different story about writing. You see, now these two different stories, some have it and some don't, and everybody has everything they need. We will tell these stories as these events occur to us. Now, every time you get an acceptance or rejection letter, those events, those experiences will either be proof that you have it or don't, or they will simply be information about how much you are trusting what you already have. The biggest difference in experience that you see in writers in terms of whether they're flourishing or not, and this has for sure been true for me, as I went from not sharing anything I wrote to sharing it with a lot of people now, has been the degree to which I have trusted my own curiosity, the degree to which I have listened instead of trying to think, the degree to which I've understood that I my equality, the degree to which I have trusted in that source of intelligence. All you are really seeing in people who are flourishing and people who are not are those people who understand on some level what it is they were born with, and the people who are still trying to believe it. That's it. That is it. That's it. So that's my other story about writing. That is my new story about writing. You already have everything you want. You have curiosity. It's all you need. You've got an imagination. It'll answer any question. It'll answer any question you ask every time. It may take a while. It might take a day. Well, it might take a minute. It might be instantaneous. It might take a minute. It might take an hour as you sit there drumming on the desktop. Or it might not come until that night when you're cooking dinner. Or it might not come for a month or 6 months. Sometimes it'll take 10 years to get the answer because you so maybe aren't ready to receive it. I know that's been true for me. But it wants to come, baby. If you're asking that question, it's a coming. It's a coming. It always does. That imagination of yours will answer any question at all. So all you got to do is be curious. How could I say this better? What's a better way to say this? What's more interesting? That doesn't seem to hit it. What's a better way to do it? How could I be quicker? How could I say it with fewer words? How could I be more? How could I get rid of that adjective? What could I put in instead? These are questions too, you see. This is all part of the imagination. Different story about writing. Give it a try. Give it a try. A lot of metaphysics in there. You don't have to worry about all that. Don't worry about it. Just remember, you have enough. If you have an imagination, you have enough. You have enough. You have enough. I, though, have to keep remembering this every single day. I don't just know it like I know my name. Every day I sit down to write, I have to remind myself I have everything I need. I got everything I need. Let me just trust that that's enough. I can't learn it often enough, which is why I'm sharing with you now. So I'm going to do this again next week, a little different. Next week I'm going to give my crash course in fearless writing. I hope you'll join me for that. Again, if you like some of the perspectives here, I love talking to writers. I love working with individual writers. I like talking to writing groups. I like to give keynote addresses. If you think that I would be someone interesting to work with, please go to williamkanauer.com. Click on Craft and Confidence, my teaching, coaching, and keynote link. And you can contact me there. That's williamkanauer.com. You can also pick up a copy if you don't want to try and bring me to your organization. If that's too elaborate, you can pick up a copy of Write Within Yourself, an Author's Companion, where some of these perspectives are also expressed. That's Write Within Yourself, an Author's Companion. Probably can get it at Amazon or similar sites. All right. Well, listen, it's been great chatting with you. I hope you are having a great day wherever you are out there. I will do this again next week, like I said, when I talk about fearless writing. Until then, get curious, get really curious, and then just see where it goes.